Well, here's a conundrum for you. How do you teach religion in public schools without stirring up a hornet's nest? It's not easy, these days especially. We'll talk about it later on this hour. But first today, Lady Bird Johnson and her marriage to one of the most mercurial presidents this country has ever known. In a new book, Betty Boy Caroli paints a new portrait of Lady Bird Johnson, very much at odds with previous portrayals that painted her as something of an afterthought to her husband's presidency. Betty Boy Caroli is the author of First Ladies, Martha Washington to Michelle Obama, and Inside the White House, as well as The Roosevelt Women. Her new book is Lady Bird and Lyndon, The Hidden Story of a Marriage That Made a President, and she joins us from NPR in New York. And Betty Boy, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Well, Lyndon Johnson was so insecure. He was known for his volcanic outbursts, his unceasing demands, and his flagrant infidelities. So I'm wondering, why would anybody want to be married to this guy?
Well, that's what I thought, too. And, you know, when I wrote that book on all first ladies, I think I got it wrong on Lady Bird, because I emphasized what other historians were writing about her, that she was kind of a shy, keep in the shadows person. And yet, that didn't fit with other things I knew about her, her ability to give speeches and so forth. And I wondered why, because there were many reports of how he would criticize her in public, tell her why didn't she get a dress, nice dress like other women wore, or criticize her hairstyle, or he was really awful in public. So I wondered why a woman as sharp as she seemed to be would put up with a man like that. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to write this book and get it right, you see, show what there was behind that shadowy figure.
So what's the answer? Why would she want to be married to this guy?
You know, she considered it a team, and she never expressed a regret about being married to somebody like that. She said, he made me a better person. He made me accomplish more than I ever would. She seemed to like the idea that he wanted to shape up how she looked and make her more presentable. She definitely considered herself an essential part of his career. And she talked about our presidency, when our presidency ends. So when people would say to her, how can you retreat into the background like that? She really saw it as doing an essential part of what he was doing, which she thought was very important for the country.
Is it fair to say she was a wife and a partner for the 1960s, but maybe not for the new century that we're in right now?
Yes, I think that's a very good point to make. Her daughters even made that point, that she would say to them, it's your generation, not mine, in which the women want to have their own careers in their own names. And for me, she said, Lady Bird said, I was quite happy to be a partner to a very important man.
Let's talk about that partnership. Exactly what did that entail for her? What did it do that maybe a lot of us might not be familiar with?
Well, there were many parts to that partnership. You know, what was originally written about that marriage was that Lyndon married her for her money.
Yes.
Because she came from a much wealthier background than he did. And that couldn't have been a disadvantage, because most presidents up to then had married up. That's what got me into this topic in the first place. I could see why the men married up, because I think we can say presidents are ambitious men. But I wondered why the women married down. Well, the Johnson marriage is definitely one in which she brought considerable money to the marriage. But it wasn't enough. She went on to make a lot more money. When she bought the radio station in 1943, and made it then into an enormous broadcasting empire, she was really supplying the money to keep them in politics. So that was one part, but that wasn't the most important part. She was a wonderful people person. And, you know, Lyndon could really upset people. I had interviews in which some of the people who worked for them would say, you know, Lyndon could really get me angry. He could treat me unfairly.
Yeah.
He could criticize me for something I hadn't done, or I could really get mad at him. But one man said to me, for Lady Bird, I would walk over hot coals, because she was the one who came up afterwards and cleaned up the messes. She would say, oh, Lyndon didn't mean it, you know. You're really essential to him. And people they didn't know as well, people that he had crossed in some way, you know, she would have them to dinner. She would call and say how much she and Lyndon thought of them. So she was a wonderful people person, a wonderful networker.
You know, is it fair to say that she understood him in a way that almost everybody did not, and that there was, at his core, at his base, there was this maybe in some ways almost this crippling insecurity that at times really aided him?
Oh, yes, there was an enormous insecurity and neediness. And that comes out in some letters that have just recently become available. A couple years ago, while I was working on this book, I was able to read the courtship letters that they wrote each other. Remember, they met early in September of 1934, spent only a few days together, and then he went back to Washington, and she was living there in Texas. She had just graduated from college.
And he's a congressman at that point, just for the record.
No, he's an assistant to a congressman.
An assistant to that point. He goes into the Congress when?
He runs in 1937, so they've been married about 3 years.
Yeah, that's 3 years.
But in those letters in 1934, when he was in Washington, he was actually starting law school, but that didn't last very long. And he would write her, she would write him. There were about 80 letters before they got together. He went back to Texas on Halloween, just about this time of the year, surprised her by showing up and saying, you know, we've got to get married immediately. Anyway, those letters, he really spells out what he needs. He says someplace, I need somebody to nurse me and help me to climb. And you can see his secrecy, his inability to trust people. And she's the one who writes back, now you stop being so depressed right now, you know, get up and get out and get busy. And I want us to do things together, and I want you to make the mark that you want to mark. I mean, those weren't her words, but that was the sentiment of them. So that insecurity shows up, and she is so ready to deal with it. It's really quite amazing. So 1934, that's the beginning. They get married on November 17. So the courtship, well, you most people say 10 weeks. They were together part of that time, but very little. So it's a very quick marriage.
You talked about her ability to sort of bring him out of himself a little bit. There's a story from this book that I had not heard before, and I've read a lot about Lyndon Johnson. This took place in 1964. August 25th, 1964. Now, Lyndon Johnson is president. He's been president for less than a year in the wake of John F. Kennedy's assassination. The Democrats are holding their national convention. Lyndon Johnson is to be nominated for president, and LBJ once again is in the dumps. He's telling his aides he's not going to accept the nomination, that the Democrats should choose a better prepared, better trained Harvard man. And his aides are thinking he just might be serious this time. This is just very startling stuff. What did Lady Bird do to stem the tide there?
Well, Lady Bird stepped in, and that's a very interesting anecdote about their relationship. Because remember, the Democrats were convening that August in Atlantic City, and a lot of the aides had already gone up from Washington. They were already in place. Even Lucy Johnson had gone up. But the president, as you said, he'd been president for about 9 months, and the first lady and the older daughter, Linda, were still in Washington. And Lyndon was saying, as you just reported, he was saying to his press secretary, George Reedy, I'm not going to go up there. And he said it in language that I won't use here. And up in Atlantic City, Walter Jenkins, who's his right-hand man at that time, he's tearing his hair out, calling Reedy, what's going on? What's happening? And Reedy said, you know, this time I think he really means it. So the two of them didn't know what to do. And Walter Jenkins went to the person they always went to when they needed somebody to reach Lyndon, and that was Lady Bird.
I want to interject real quickly. Lyndon is staying in the White House in his bedroom. The shades are drawn. This is a man who's really struggling with himself at that moment.
Yeah, he was feeling very down on the whole thing. You know what? Most people think he was absolutely resolved to run in 1964. But it's clear in her unpublished diary, at least, that they really wrestled with the question. They really thought Bobby Kennedy might come in and take away the nomination. They weren't at all sure it was going to go that way. Anyway, on
LBJ, terrified of Bobby Kennedy, at least politically.
Yes.
They had a very contentious relationship, a bitter relationship in so many ways.
Absolutely. So on that August day, Lady Bird wrote him a letter and said, you're every bit as good as the presidents who went before you, and if you drop out now, you would be disappointing your friends and pleasing your foes. And then, of course, she always added a big dose of love. I love you very much, and whatever you decide is all right with me. She put it on the bedstand, and she went out. And in her unpublished diary, she talks about walking on the lawn of the White House with Linda while Lyndon, the president, was up there in the bedroom, as you say, with the window shades drawn, wrestling with his own demons. I mean, she understood what was going on. And then, of course, we know that he got up and went to the convention and was nominated and won by the biggest landslide up to that time.
But if it hadn't been for Lady Bird Johnson, you wonder, and her magic with her husband, you wonder how that little scenario would have played out.
Exactly. We can never know that. Somebody said to me the other day, oh, he was just teasing Lady Bird, saying he wasn't going to go to the convention. But if he was teasing her, he certainly had his top aides worried, because they thought they were going to be out up there in Atlantic City without a man to nominate.
Betty Boy Crowley's new book is Lady Bird and Lyndon, the hidden story of a marriage that made a president. And she'll be in Kansas City at 6:30 on Tuesday evening, November 10th, at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. Go to kclibrary.org for more information or to grab a seat. So how did Lady Bird's image get so off track, Betty Boyd? I mean, as you say in here, the usual story is that LBJ married her for her money and demeaned her by flaunting his affairs, and that she put lots of flowers along the highway, sort of end of story. Where did all that come from?
Well, I think it's a complicated story. Remember, she never really went out front. I mean, he was this overpowering figure, you know, about almost a foot taller than she. Wow. And so she came off as kind of a weakling by his side. And then it was very easy in the early 1960s to have her described in really insulting terms, especially when compared to Jackie Kennedy, the fashion icon. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were some horrible things. If you look at the Time magazine, August of 1964, there's an article. It has a few compliments in it, but her nose is a little too big, her ankle's a little too thick, her accent, we won't even say what they said about that. And it must have been very, I'm not going to say daunting, but it was certainly discouraging to be held up to such an icon as Jackie Kennedy. And then, of course, after the assassination, Jackie Kennedy became even more of an icon. And I was told that in the early days of Johnson's presidency, people would come up to Mrs. Johnson and call her Jackie. They were so kind of bewildered by this idea that she'd taken over the job that they gave her the wrong name.
It also strikes me, we talked about his Lyndon Johnson's fear of Bobby Kennedy, but he had this lifelong inferiority complex because he hadn't graduated from an Ivy League college. How did that play into Lyndon Johnson's makeup?
Oh, yes, you hear that again and again in comments by Lyndon Johnson. In fact, that day in August, he said, let them choose as their candidate a Harvard man. Mm-hmm. You know, he went to a teacher's college, St. Marcos, in a little town in Texas, and Lady Bird went to the University of Texas and got 2 degrees. In fact, she's the first lady to have 2 degrees, and the only one up to Hillary Clinton. Now they all have 2 degrees. But anyway, he would often hold that up even to her and say, well, you can do that, if he wanted her to go out and give a speech or something, do something difficult. He said, you, with your 2 degrees from the University of Texas, you can do that. So he had an inferiority complex that, if that's a word we can use anymore, he was often describing himself as inferior to her in education, in ability to write, and often admiring or envying the people who had those East Coast degrees. She did not feel that way. You know, after he died, she rented a house for several summers on Martha's Vineyard, and the very people that he denigrated, made fun of, she became friendly with. She even reestablished a friendship with Jackie Kennedy Onassis at that point, and she saw people that Lyndon would have never wanted to spend a summer next to.
Mm-hmm. Did Lady Bird ever talk directly about, you know, Lyndon's inferiority complex and sort of as the reason why she excused some of his behaviors?
Well, she would say, I'm bewildered by Lyndon's behavior, but no more bewildered than he is. And she sometimes would say, I wonder what he would have been if he had gone to a prestigious university somewhere. So it was a subject that intrigued her, and I don't think she ever came up with an answer.
Was it love at first sight for her?
Oh, when they met, you know, they met on a September afternoon in a friend's office in Austin. It was a mutual friend, a woman they both respected. And it was, I mean, Lady Bird talks about the electric going and being drawn to each other. But she was a very, what shall I say, carefully controlled young woman. What was she, 22 years old then? Well, she hadn't had her 26. Let's see, she was born in 1912. That was 1934, so she hadn't had her 22nd birthday yet. Mm-hmm. A young woman out of college, but she said, I didn't know what I'd met, but I knew I'd met something special. She describes him as tall and thin with wavy hair.
Sure.
And it was really, I think, the love of her life.
Did she see him as a future president of the United States right out of the gate?
Well, she saw him as somebody who was going places. Mm-hmm. You know, during the courtship, as I said, they met in early September, and the first weekend in, or one of the weekends in October, I think it's the first weekend in October when Oklahoma plays Texas, she went up to Dallas for the game, and she stayed with an old school friend, and he found her, calling from Washington, he found her with a person-to-person call, which you could evidently make back there in 1934. Mm-hmm. And she wrote him and she said, however did you find me when there are so many people by this same name in the city of Dallas? But she said, I guess you're a young man who generally gets what he wants, aren't you? And I think she had a big touch of ambition. You know, that little town where she grew up, which it wasn't even a town. She grew up in a big house, a big 17-room house with, I don't know, six fireplaces south of a little town called Karnak. And she very much wanted to get out of that part of Texas. She says the reason she took journalism classes at the University of Texas and got a degree in journalism was that she wanted to go someplace exciting where things were happening, like Alaska or Hawaii. So there's a big streak of ambition in her, too, and I think she saw those two fitting together very well.
Was she into politics?
Well, you know, there's that famous letter that she wrote during the courtship in which she says, I hope you're not going into politics. But that is so not in line with other things she wrote him. Because in other letters, she's saying, oh, do you like to debate economics the way I do? And she's criticizing some of his colleagues, and she's saying what she thinks about socialism. She was a very opinionated woman, but she just learned to keep quiet about some of her opinions later.
You know, his philandering was legendary. How did she deal with it?
Oh, yes, that was a topic. Remember that the Johnsons are really the first presidential couple who have to deal with that, because it was pretty much accepted that news people would not report the president's sexual adventures. And, in fact, we've heard on several fronts that Lyndon called aside the reporters when he first became president and said, now you're going to see some women going in and out of my bedroom, and you're just going to keep quiet about that the way you've always done. But then he went ahead to really flaunt his flirtations. For example, he, as you point out, he became president in November of 63, and the first Easter, which would have been April of 64, the Johnsons went back to the ranch for a kind of extended vacation. And Time magazine's reporting that he's riding around in his convertible with all these pretty reporters sitting around, you know, and the two in the back seat and one beside him who's cooing into his ear, Mr. President, you're fun. That kind of flirtation was not reported about previous presidents, and yet he seems to have cooperated with it. Now, how did she handle it? Well, I got an early idea of how she handled it when I looked at the courtship letters. When they were separated and he was in Washington in 1934 and he was begging her to come and marry him immediately, he was also writing back that he'd been out the other night with this little radio writer named Helen, and they'd been dancing until 2 o'clock, or another night they were dining. And Lady Bird never mentioned that, at least in the letters that we have now. She never mentioned Helen, the little radio writer, who happened to be the daughter of a New York judge and was considered, I think, very sophisticated in Lady Bird's mind. later in an interview, Lady Bird said that she knew that relationship wasn't platonic, but she thought that somebody like Helen, with her all experience in New York and Washington, could sharpen up Lyndon. So she didn't object to that, and that was kind of the attitude she took with later women. She would say, oh, I tried to learn something from her. One of the women with whom he was associated for several years in the 1940s, Helen Gehagen Douglas, was an overnight guest at the White House when the Johnsons first came in. And Lady Bird said, oh, she's one of the most interesting people I've talked to in a long time. She even lent her a nightgown.
Wow, wow. I got to move on to Vietnam. What was her counsel to the president about the war in Vietnam?
Well, Lady Bird always said that the first couple years in the White House were wine and roses, and the last years were pure hell. And most of it was because of the Vietnam, criticism of the Vietnam and uncertainty. She described it as a time that she was really unable to give any good counsel because it was so complicated. She felt she didn't know. She said poverty, education, you know, she was very influential in getting Head Start off the ground. Those things I can deal with, but Vietnam is just too big a topic. On the other hand, I now know that after Lyndon left the White House, one of the editors who was working on Lyndon's memoir asked Lyndon if he really thought that, if he still believed the domino theory, if he really thought that the whole of Southeast Asia would fall. And Lyndon said he did, and he went into great detail saying, my grandson will one day fight in Vietnam, it's not over yet. And Lady Bird spoke up and said, Lyndon, don't you think that with all that Vietnam has on its plate, that what you think might happen might not happen? And the editor said at that point, I left the room because I realized that I was intruding on a conversation that had probably taken place before. So to answer your question, she said she was absolutely at sea about how to advise her husband. But one does wonder, reading reports like that, if she didn't suggest. She was very good at saying, now, Lyndon, don't you think? So it's not like she said, we should do this, or you're wrong, although she said that sometimes too. But on Vietnam, she would have more likely said, now, Lyndon, don't you think? Or what about this? Or have you considered this possibility?
Her most famous legacy was her highway beautification program. No small feat. What did she do?
Well, the Highway Beautification Act, which passed just about 50 years ago right now. In other words, it was passed in October of 65, and it was signed after President Johnson got out of the hospital following his gallbladder surgery. It was something, the environment was something that she really care deeply about. You know, now we expect, since her, we expect every first lady to have a project. But you'll note that many of them drop it as soon as they leave the White House. I mean, I don't hear much about Nancy Reagan's Just Say No to Drugs now that she's out of the White House. But with Lady Bird, it was a true and authentic interest, because as a child, remember, she had a very lonely childhood. She had two older brothers, but they were sent away to boarding school so far away it took them 3 days to come home, so they never came home. She was raised as an only child, for the most part. Her mother died when she was five, and I always say she just kind of raised herself. But what she could do was wander around the fields. Her father owned thousands of acres. So she could wander alone. She read a lot, too. But she said the outdoors, it was my kingdom. It was my love. It was my life. So she kind of thinks it saved her. And I think she thought it could save other people. She said it having a decent environment, a place for people to have a recreation area that they have access to, that they can get to, that will decrease delinquency. It will improve happiness. I mean, she saw it as a key to solving many problems. So I would say, first of all, it was authentic. It was for real. And it was deeply felt.
Final point, she outlived her husband, Betty Boyd, by 35 years, living to be 94 years old. How were her years without her husband?
Well, yes, it was a very long time. That, you know, she said that I put up on the shelf a lot of things. And when Lyndon died, I was able to take those down. One thing she did was travel abroad. You know, he hated to travel, except for work. But she did, as I've already mentioned, she rented the house in the East, but she traveled to foreign cities. She was in the Far East. She had some wonderful trips. And she got, I should say, closer to her daughters. You know, she always said Lyndon came first, then her daughters, and then herself last. The daughters tended to say Lyndon came first, the radio television business second, and then them. But anyway, the daughters certainly weren't in prime place. She got better acquainted with them and with her grandchildren.
Betty Boyd Caroli's new book, Lady Bird and Lyndon, The Hidden Story of a Marriage That Made a President, shall be in Kansas City 6:30 Tuesday evening, November 10th, at the Plaza branch of the Kansas City Public Library. More information, kclibrary.org. Betty Boyd Caroli, thanks so much for your time. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks for talking with me.